We've got a really terrific show tonight that's going to really drop a bomb all around the world. But certainly we're not the ones who are the only ones who'll be dropping the bombs. Bob's here, and he's going to drop some bombs tonight. And we're going to talk about what's all the things that are falling through the cracks. The propaganda and the information overload is just unbelievable. And the stuff, the nuggets and the gold nuggets falling through the cracks, Dobbs and I and our guests are going to talk about tonight.
Okay, well, people know that they can always contact us with questions, comments, especially questions, because a lot of people have comments that we just end up taking you off the air because they're just too crazy. But if you have a question, you see, then we have the experts who can tell you what is going on or where to look for the answers that you're looking for. So if you have a question, 1-866-827-MOJO, and that's the number if you're in D.C., and that's good because we'd like to hear from people on the West Coast. We get a lot of email from the East Coast in the last few shows.
Yeah.
And if you're in Toronto or anywhere in the East, it's 416-870-6400.
Yeah, you know, if you have a lot of our listeners violently disapprove of the way that Orthodox histories are being written and the way the news is being reported, and there's just so many people who are coming to the fore using the internet talking about how most of the stories are quite full of baloney. And we've got just so much for Bob and I to talk about.
We've got Bob here right now.
Let's go, Bob.
Bob Dobbs, welcome.
Welcome, Lenny. Welcome, Deep Throat. Great to see you here in Manhattan, Deep Throat. It was very interesting to see your reaction to the situation I'm in. And, Lenny, someone mentioned the phrase falling through the cracks. My first bomb to mention tonight is that the phrase falling through the cracks is exactly what's happened. We can announce proudly that we have on our board of advisors, as a result of recent events, Marsha McLuhan, Frank Zappa, and James Joyce.
That's terrific. That's terrific. When you guys were down at the airport, I see that there was a story out of the Washington Times that NASA plans to read minds at the airports. Who went through the airport, Deep? Did you go through the airport?
I went through the airport. I must say, though, that it was quite interesting. I have a lot of technical gear in my bag.
Yes.
When I left Canada, the American Customs at the Pearson International Airport went through it with a fine-tooth comb. They did everything but look up my cheeks.
Yeah, they
now,
didn't
you know
have
what cheeks I mean.
They so, didn't have this technology. But when you hit the U.S. border, the Washington Times says now they're reading minds at the airport.
Well, luckily, I psyched myself up, and I was thinking pleasant thoughts about albino puppies and fuzzy bunnies, and I fooled them, and I got through. But coming back, here's the problem.
Yeah.
Coming back, I had this bag full of gear. They checked my shoes. They never opened the bag to see what was in it, and there was all kinds of high-tech machinery that I thought, of course they're going to check. They did not check.
Did you clear your mind of the fact that you know me?
I cleared my mind of everything about
perfect.
You and Bob Dobbs.
Absolutely.
I am afraid to be here.
Well,
please don't kill me. I'm just doing my job.
You must have done a good job. That's why you're back this week.
Well, it was amazing to see Bob Dobbs. And I got to tell you, for people that are listening from New York, you know, I almost want to apologize if what we say on this show hurts your feelings. But, you know, you've got to grow up. You've got to question things. You can't just sit back and say, 9/11's over. Let's just pretend it never happened. You've got to do more than that.
Well, with more tragedy and sex, here's Bob Dobbs and his guest. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I'm really happy to bring Ralph back on again. It's Ralph Schoenman. You can see his bio on our website. But Ralph left us titillated last time, a couple of weeks ago, with several topics. Jackson Stevens, Echelon, the JFK assassination, the false flag operation around September 11th, and the Mossad. So, Ralph, if you're there, let's go forward.
Welcome, Ralph.
Thank you.
I really want to talk about the false flag operation of 9/11. Expose that one.
Okay, Lenny, let me begin by asking Ralph to show the relationship of Jackson Stevens, Promise Software, Echelon, and September 11th. Take away, Ralph.
Well, actually, as we were discussing last time, Bob and Lenny, Jackson Stevens is a multi-billionaire who is a long association with the National Security Agency, and a particular relationship to the Republican Democratic parties, of which he's been the primary funder of each. And it happens that the National Security Agency Southern headquarters, of which Stevens is a principal figure, was at the airport in Venice, Florida. And Venice, Florida is a small town where there were two small flight schools run by Rudy Decker and Arnie Riethoff, where Muhammad Atta and his colleagues were taking flight lessons.
Yeah, these are the so-called guys who flew the plane into the World Trade Center.
Well, yes, the so-called ringleaders, Muhammad Atta and Mawlana al-Sharri, who were accused of piloting the aircraft into the World Trade Center and are said to have learned to fly at Huffman Aviation Flight School of Rudy Deckers in Venice, Florida. Of course, what's more interesting than that, and we'll come back to who Rudy Deckers and Rudolph actually are, is that these guys were not just flying at these rinky-dink flight schools, but they were trained at U.S. military installations with top security clearances.
Woo!
In fact,
heavy.
Yes, all of them. And that's, by the way, been in the mainstream press, Washington Post, Newsweek, Knight Ridder newspapers, and the press in Florida, in Sarasota and in Venice, was running the stories that the terrorist pilots trained at U.S. military schools. Newsweek reported that the U.S. military sources had given the FBI information that the alleged hijackers of the planes in Tuesday's terror attacks received their training at secure U.S. military installations.
Yep.
Now, Ralph, what is the connection of Jackson Stevens and the National Security Agency in Venice?
Well, you see, the operative thing here is that the National Security Agency principal headquarters down there and Jackson Stevens are involved with all those issues that to do with military intelligence, defense intelligence, and the like. And it's instructive that immediately after September 11th, the National Security Agency ordered all of its files on pertaining to 9/11 to be shredded.
That's their modus operandi every time they want to cover it up.
Yes, and actually, in that connection, the National Security Agency arranged with Governor Jeb Bush to have a fleet of rider rental cars go to each police station in those local communities where they had been monitoring the activities of these presumptive terrorists, and all of the files that were in those police departments reflecting their monitoring activity were taken, loaded up into these rider rental vans, and taken to the airport and put onto a military C-130 with Jeb Bush on board and flown out of there to Washington.
What day was that done?
That was actually done in the second week after the events of September 11th.
This is our 12th show. This is a wonderful
thing. It is.
And I'd like to thank Chorus and Mojo for having the guts to put us on the air, because when I told people in New York about this and when they checked out our website, they said, how on earth do you guys get to give these thoughts and get people to think and question reality and question what we're told and how things work? And here we are.
To update consciousness.
That's it.
I'll tell you, I can't wait to get going with this, because I got to hobnob with Dobbs and the others and the spies and assassins because I was a pilot to these guys. So I was backstage in the Global Theater, flying assassins around, flying spies, rescuing them from short fields, numerous black ops operations. And so, Dobbs, I really want to hear more about what was going on down in Venice, California.
That's right. Now, we have Ralph Shulman on the phone from California, who's our special guest. Agent Stone is here in the studio, and we've got 3 phone calls and 2 emails. This is going very, very well. But, Bob Dobbs, I want to turn it over to you to ask Ralph something, and then we're going to go to some phone calls.
I'm going to ask Ralph to relate Jackson Stevens to Thomas Opler, Hillary Clinton, and systemics, and then he's going to put into a bigger context.
Well, you see, Jackson Stevens and his operations, not only with the National Security Agency, but with the Defense Intelligence Agency as well, were involved in the development of high-powered electronic and satellite spying communication systems involving InSLAW and Promise software, and Systematics, which was actually a company of Stevens. And this software was used in tracking every financial transaction and being able actually to wipe out accounts and monitor all input and output of accounts globally. It's essentially not only a license to steal, but a license to monitor all movement of monies and finances in every institution across the planet. And needless to say, this kind of highly sophisticated spying the technology applies not only to the workings of banking capital in the United States and globally, but it applies as well to the monitoring of the activity of any figure or group or even state apparatus that the U.S. rulers wish to spy upon and to penetrate. So their pretense that they don't know about this and that event, or to take a small figure like Osama bin Laden, who was, after all, a creation of the Central Intelligence Agency, every time the man broke wind, it was monitored in this particular technology. But to come back to the specific point regarding the Promise software, there was a William Hamilton of Innslaw who had pursued a case for many years about the Innslaw Promise software, which had been stolen by the U.S. Justice Department, and there was a lawsuit pertaining to that. There was a Central Intelligence agent named Michael Riconosciuto who had been involved in that and worked on this in conjunction with Bobby Inman at that time of the National Security Agency, who had created the codes that permitted the computer hardware to give off signals disguised as noise and to essentially implement global spying apparatus that this entailed.
Yeah, well, these guys were playing around with the top technology, pushing the envelope with satellites, computers, lasers, and all the technology. They were playing around and keeping an eye on everybody and listening to all phone calls, and could just go through the magnitude of the powerful equipment that was at their disposal.
Well, for instance, the National Security Agency at the time was working through a Little Rock-based company called Systematics, which was controlled by Jackson Stevens, who was a principal financial backer of Bill Clinton, and also one of the principal figures with the BCCI, the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, which was, as we know, has long been since exposed as a drug running and money laundering operation of huge magnitude through with the covert operations of the intelligence agencies were carried through. And Jackson Stevens was involved with the BCCI purchase of First American Bank in Washington, D.C., and it bridges the two parties, and it involves the Clintons as it indeed involved the Bushes. But before we go into some more detail about this, I really would like to emphasize that, you know, when we're talking about these sorts of operations, these are the standard operational procedures of that tiny little oligarchy, that 2% of the population in the United States that controls, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce, 90% of the wealth. They average 14 corporate directorships per person. There was an executive of Avis and American Express named Robert Townsend who did a book called Up the Organization, who calculated that about 5,000 people control what he called the commanding heights of the U.S. economy. So this is a very specific and concrete ruling class, an oligarchy of finance, banking, and corporate capital that buys the political process, that essentially uses the state as its own milk cow, and funds both political parties. So when we deal with such things as sophisticated computer technology to monitor banking operations and to launder money and to operate the drug trade and to use that illicit money for the funding of assassination programs and covert operations, this is really the enforcement arm of a ruling class in the United States that uses the state apparatus and the military and the intelligence as its means of extracting profit, of stealing resources, be it oil or diamonds or whatever the commodity that capitalism feeds upon for profit, be it the need for them to intervene to suppress movements of national independence or people's attempts to wrest resources for themselves. These are the continuing operations of a ruling class. And I think it's important for us to understand the institutional nature of this situation, because while it is true that these rulers engage in conspiracy and engage in secret operations because they can't openly disclose what they do to the public that they want to manipulate, By the same token, it is not these conspiracies that explain history or explain the way power operates. It's institutional, and I like to make an emphatic point about that, so we're focused correctly on who rules and what we have to do to change that.
All right, now I guess we're going to go over to our spy babe, Eve Stone. Hello, Eve.
Hi there.
You're very, very beautiful.
Thank you.
Now, you have an email that was sent in just recently, and I think it's very appropriate. Could you read it, please?
We have an email from Sean D. from Timmins, Ontario. And his question is, what is Promise Software? What does Jackson Stevens do for a living, and does he have a job?
All right. Now that's over to you, Mr. Shulman.
Well, Promise Software is a sophisticated computer program technology for monitoring operations on a planetary basis. And as a matter of fact, Jackson Stevens is a multi-billionaire. His main base of operations is Little Rock, Arkansas. He has many, many companies, one of which is Beverly Industries, and Beverly Industries actually is operated out of Venice, Florida, and that has to do with nursing homes and health care. Jackson Stevens funds the Boone Law Firm, which has been the primary law firm of the Clintons and of the Democratic Party. Jackson Stevens has been involved in the arranging of the financing of the companies of George W. Bush, as the Houston Chronicle had documented way back on June 4th, 1992, in a two-part investigative series, when the feds were looking into the G.W. Bush bin Laden connection. This is 1992.
Unbelievable.
Federal authorities investigating the activities of Houston businessmen, investors, and companies controlled by the son of President Bush, accused of representing powerful Saudi interests illegally. The Houston Chronicle at that time, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, known as FinCEN, and the FBI, reviewing accusations of businessman James Bath, directed funds from Saudi investors to influence the Reagan and Bush administrations. FinCEN, which is a division of the U.S. Department of Treasury, was investigating their money laundering. And it's interesting that the main figure who was involved in facilitating this, James Bath, was in fact operating for Jackson Stevens. The investors about whom they were speaking, by the way, were the holders of the bin Laden fortune and the bin Laden investment group in Saudi Arabia.
Who else?
And,
who else?
I'm sorry?
I mean, that goes without saying. That's natural. That's they're all in cahoots, right, Ralph?
Well, we should be specific about who's who in this particular zoo.
That's right.
Well, Ralph, I have something. You mentioned health care. It was Hillary Clinton who worked for Jackson Stevens, involved with some business opportunity by bringing in her health care attempt in 93.
No, I would say, I mean, essentially Beverly Industries, which, by the way, has been indicted many times for its abuse of its patients and its exploitation of them, is part of the rapacious control over health care services, and particularly nursing homes, that many of the conglomerates have gotten into, and Jackson Stevens has certainly been one of those.
Okay, we're going to go to a phone call here, and I should remind you, you're listening to Cloak and Dagger on Mojo Radio, and we are talking about conspiracies. Now, if this is a lot for you to take in, you should be taking out a pen and paper, unless you're driving, of course. You don't want to be doing that. And writing down some of these key phrases. You can always find out more about this show by going to mojoradio.com on the right side of the screen. Click on Cloak and Dagger, and you're in. You'll be able to listen to a lot of the things we're saying here, slow it down, write it down, and know what to research, because I realize sometimes we go very fast on this show, but this is important news, and we're trying to get as much of it to you as possible. Let's go over to Ron from Mississauga. Thank you for holding.
Hi, how you doing?
Very good.
I'm phoning in regards to that so-called terrorist they have in the jail down in Buffalo. They found it found that he had 47 top secret documents in the cell that he was in.
You're saying the Mesabi terrorists in Buffalo?
Yeah.
Anybody want to take that?
Well, I'd like to say this about this. The reports are that this particular individual had been asked to be an informant for the FBI, and it's important to note that Zacharias Massawi, at his trial, stated that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had been monitoring all of this activity. They had a complete document and dossier on all of the communications and plans, that they didn't want to interfere with any of them, that in fact they were determined to see them proceed. This is the statement of Massawi before the court. And he said that he would like to appear before Congress because he wanted to present his documentation on the role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the U.S. government in these operations. Now, this is Massawi's statement. As soon as Massawi had made that declaration in the courtroom, the court then decided that there would be no more public access to the proceedings of the trial of Massawi. And within, I think, 48 hours of that, the FBI requested that all members of the Senate Intelligence Committee turn over their personal notebooks, their memoranda, their diaries, to disclose any contact that they'd had with whom? With the media. So what we're dealing with continuously when we look at these exposés about the constant prior knowledge and the constant informing of the intelligence agencies is that these are false flag operations. These are, in fact, people who were monitored by the intelligence agencies, funded by the intelligence agencies, run by the intelligence agencies to stage events to provide the rationale for long previously decided policies, such as major war for oil in Central Asia and now in Iraq.
Now, Ralph, that's what I want you to go into a bit more and explain very tersely about this idea of a false flag operation. And I don't know if everybody understands it, but, you know, in light of the fact that we've got new seismic data, which refutes the official World Trade Center explanation, and we've got former top German ministers, ministers of technology in Germany rejecting the entire official story of 9/11 attacks. This is what is not being covered in the press, that the official story has been rejected by the Minister of Technology in Germany, who certainly knows a lot about technology, and the seismic data refutes the official explanation. So the official explanation that we're being given in the major press has been totally rejected by anybody in authority and who has neutrality. You now say it's a false flag operation. So let me throw out the question. Was the Mossad involved in this? Who hired them? What is going on? Give us an idea of what you mean by false flag cutout and what's really happened here.
Well, okay. You remember that when we were on last time, we were talking about the attack on the World Trade Center in 1993. Now, what emerged about the 1993 attack, and I'll be brief about it so we can get back specifically to 9/11. What emerged is that the person who had organized that bombing in 1993 of the World Trade Center, Imad Ali Salem, was not only an Egyptian intelligence agency, but a long-standing operative of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, Imad Ali Salem recruited people to this plan, but he also wore a wire to each meeting where they discussed it. And he made transcripts of each of those discussions, which were then deposited in the offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York. For 6 months, the FBI had 50 boxes of the documents about the planned bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. Now, it's not only that they had the prior knowledge, but this guy was their operative. This was a provocation. This was a staged event. The hands of intelligence were all over this.
And what was the ultimate purpose now? Who's gained key bono from this whole thing?
The question is, and I want to come to what you asked about the Mossad as well. In order to destroy the surplus, increase the military budget by hundreds of billions of dollars, terrorize the American people into acquiescence into not just a one war, but a series of wars. We're told that this is going to be in 60 countries and the wars will last our lifetimes. How do you gain acquiescence for such an agenda without staging a Reichstag fire, an event that will whipsaw the American public into numbed acquiescence? That's the rationale. Coming back for the moment to 1993, the person who organized the apartment where the meetings were held, who secured the van, who made the arrangements, was Guzi Hadass, well-known Mossad operative. Now, this is information that was corroborated in the International Herald Tribune, in the Los Angeles Times, in the Village Voice, in the Muslim Monitor in Houston, and so on. As it pertains to the events of September 11th, every intelligence agency in the world had prior knowledge of these events. And I'm talking about the Russian intelligence agency, the German intelligence agencies,
right.
The French intelligence agencies, the Indian intelligence agencies,
exactly.
All with prior knowledge, and not just prior knowledge, but were sending warnings to the U.S. and so on. And now the plethora of reports that's emerging in the last 2 weeks about how every one of our own intelligence agencies has been priorly informed of such planned attacks, it's transparent as to what we're dealing with here. A false flag operation is one in which it's imputed to others when in fact it is authored by those who are doing the imputing.
Yeah, it's great being here with Eve. Eve's a spy babe, and you can see her at mojoradio.com. So much to cover. One of the things I did want to mention was that the man who Ralph spent a lot of time working for, Bertrand Russell, one of the things we're going to ask Ralph to get into a bit later in the second hour is to talk about this guy, Bertrand Russell, and how at the end of the war in 45, when everybody started to have access to atomic weapons and nuclear weapons, they had to get the nations together, Khrushchev and Kennedy, and get these and the guys above them who had control of these things, and try and find some rules of engagement so that the world wouldn't blow itself up. And Ralph, of course, Bertrand Russell was involved in trying to broker a deal and keep get the genie back in the bottle and keep some sense of control. And we should ask him about that and talk about that after we continue, first of all, with the false flag operations. And it's amazing, just before we go to the phones, the stuff that's falling through the cracks. German scientists have talked about how Saddam has doubles, and a German forensic pathologist is now reporting that there's not two, but three doubles of Saddam. Saddam has three doubles. Of course, Bush has a number of doubles.
Lenny!
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, relax, Lenny. Hold it. We're going back into the Mossad. Now, Ralph, develop some more about the Mossad.
Oh, yes, do that. Good stuff, Bob.
Yes, well, keep in mind that the operation for 9/11 has been deployed to create a series of wars to fragment the Middle East. And one of the most important documents that was developed in the late 70s, a remarkable document of the Mossad, which was called the Strategy for Israel in the 1980s, outlined a timetable for the dissolution of each Middle Eastern state in its turn, and it called for the breakup of these nations into their original ethnic and religious components, based on what the former foreign minister of Israel, Abba Iban, had called the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. And first amongst the targets here was Iraq, notably because of its some 220 billion barrels of oil and oil reserves. But Iraq was to be followed by Syria and Lebanon and Saudi Arabia and Iran and Egypt as a vehicle through which the U.S. and Israel would seize direct control of these resources and remove the nominal sovereign governments in each of these countries. And in 1979, a young man who would become the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, was involved in organizing a conference in Tel Aviv at which George Bush and George Shultz and leading figures in the group that now is effectively running U.S. policy, people such as Pearl and Wolfowitz and so on, conference on the category of terrorism. Terror, terror, terror. It was the replacement of the specter of the Soviet Union and of communism. The category of terror, which would be the rationale for ever-increasing military budgets and ever-increasing numbers of wars. It's interesting about Netanyahu because, as the Israeli press was exposing at the time, he was not only a central intelligence but a defense intelligence operative, and he was operating under four different names, including John Sullivan, John L. Sullivan, in the United States, as the U.S. and Israeli press would report. So these were military intelligence plans to invent the category of terror, Of course, the groups that are accused of terror are in fact funded by intelligence agencies, such as the Central Intelligence Agency with respect to Osama bin Laden and Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, $6 billion to create what eventually became Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan for the purpose of disrupting the Central Asian countries of the then Soviet Union and so on.
Okay, can we go to a caller today?
Yes, I'd love to do that. Let's go over to someone who's been holding out a very long time. Thank you, John, for holding.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yes, I want to recently it's been disclosed, but I think a lot of people might have known this already, that Donald Rumsfeld, who's most vocal and supportive of the idea of invasion of Iraq, was sent over by, as an appointee of Reagan, to find ways to facilitate Saddam Hussein and aid him in his war against Iran at the time, as a lot of people might have forgot because they just don't seem to provide context in the news these days. So what is anybody, if you can tell anything on Donald Rumsfeld, and secondly, in relation to the Mossad and your story, can you tell about all the art students who were over in the United States before September 11th and who were going to people's houses on the pretext of selling paintings, but
yes,
scoping out DEA agents, FBI people, and all this sort of thing? Could you elaborate on that, please?
Right. Immediately after 9/11, the Israeli newspaper Yedioth Aharonot published an article which stated that the Israeli intelligence agencies, the Shabak, advised Ariel Sharon not to travel on the 11th, or he was going to New York for an event that was organized by Zionist organizations in support of Israel, and it was canceled on the basis of the advice from the Shabak. Helen Burney, the commentator of the newspaper, wrote that the Shabak prevented Sharon from traveling because they had information that there would be something occurring in the United States on that day, which made it inadvisable. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz revealed as well in an article on September 12th that the Federal Bureau of Investigation had arrested five Israelis 4 hours after the attack on the Twin Towers, filming the smoking skyline from the roof of their company's building, I'm quoting, and that the FBI arrested the five as they were caught videotaping the disaster with cries of joy and mockery. This is a quote from the from Haaretz at the time. What you were referring to of the 60, it actually became 120 Mossad and Israeli intelligence operatives posing as art students and with other cover. What's interesting about that is that not only were these so-called art students, but in fact Mossad operatives, spread over the United States, but 60 of them were in the location of Hollywood, Venice, and Sarasota, Florida. Two of them living two houses from Mohammed Atta, monitoring their activities, in fact, in contact with them in the period prior to the events of September 11th. And Fox News did a four-part expose of the Mossad, not only in spying within the United States, but in monitoring the activity of these people now being labeled as terrorists and hijackers, in close surveillance of them and interaction with them throughout that period. What has been known as the White Van scandal, which was exposed on the show 2020, had to do with a moving company in New Jersey that was locating its white van right at the building across from the World Trade Center in the hours prior to it, with an elaborate photographic apparatus set up to film the events. And when the operatives who were involved in this, with the cover of being employed by a moving company, were investigated, they all were removed to Israel. They've since been disclosed by ABC and by 2020 to be Israeli military intelligence and Mossad operatives. It's these events which gave rise to the extraordinary interview with Arno de Borsgrave, the editor-at-large of United Press International, and the former editor of Newsweek, with General Hamid Ghul, who was the prior head of the Inter-Services Intelligence Organization of Pakistan, which was the very vehicle through which not only Al-Qaeda was funded and operated and run, but the Taliban itself put into power in Afghanistan. Now, what's extraordinary about the interview with Gul Hamid is that he's very precise about what occurred on 9/11. Quote, in an exclusive interview with United Press International, the fundamentalist general stated it is clear there was a plot by the United States Air Force and the Mossad. The Twin Towers were first attacked, he states, at 8:45 a.m., and four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace, yet Air Force jets did not scramble until 10 a.m.
Okay, Ralph, would you could give us the quote from the Pakistani intelligence man?
Yes. Well, as I was discussing what Gul Hamid, who was the head of the ISI, had said to Arno de Borsgrave, what he described was, and he talks about it from his specific knowledge. It's a very long interview, and he speaks of the attack on the World Trade Center as a staged operation, and in particular he discusses what we were mentioning earlier, the role of the Mossad. He says this will be hushed up in the investigation like the Warren report after the Kennedy assassination. And he states attribution of this to bin Laden is without any credibility at all. He says, from a cave inside a mountain, from a peasant's hovel, do you think bin Laden is capable of mounting so sophisticated an operation? Let's be serious. The Mossad and its American counterparts are the culprits. That's who benefits from the crime. Is handed to the Bush administration with its acquiescence, the opportunity for which it has been preparing for years, and I know this from firsthand knowledge, to consolidate America's imperial grip on the Gulf and to acquire control of the Caspian Basin by extending a direct military presence in Central Asia. He says Bush 43, by which he means Bush W, as opposed to his father George Bush, who he calls Bush 41, have been preparing this for a very long time. And he said the Mossad and its U.S. accomplices in the U.S. spend $40 billion a year on 11 intelligence agencies. I know this well. That's $400 billion in 10 years, and you tell me it's taken by surprise. Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit in the World Trade Center, I'm still quoting, CNN announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. I'm in intelligence. This is a planned piece of disinformation by the perpetrators to create an instant mindset to put public opinion in a trance to prevent even intelligent people from thinking for themselves.
That's awesome.
And he is in particular detail about the hand of the Mossad in this operation. And Gul Hamid is not alone in documenting that. By now, a section of the Israeli press has been involved in exposing the role of the Mossad. And, of course, Fox News and ABC have been doing the reports on the actual operations of these Mossad agents across the United States, particularly the 60 who were in touch with these presumptive hijackers, the so-called terrorists, for the entire period of their presence in the United States prior to 9/11.
Richard, thank you for holding.
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
Great show as usual. In the mid-80s, I was involved in security in the Toronto area, protecting the butts of some of these diplomats coming, living, working in this great country of ours. A lot of conspiracies out there, and being in that type of work, you kind of hear things and scrape the surface of certain other things. Basically, I'm not saying none of this stuff is true. What I'd like to know is, and probably Mr. Joe Public would like to know, is what else can we do about it other than talk about it?
Very good question.
Yes, I think that's the critical question. And the answer, in my judgment, is specifically for all of us who are involved in political activity, is to break with the parties of capital. In the United States, that means understanding that there are not two parties, but one big property party with two names. And it means that we have to build a political movement based on the labor, on labor, in my judgment, and on the trade union movement and the mass of our population, a political vehicle for opposing the two capitalist parties in the U.S. And I think that's as true for Canada and for other countries as well. Because in essence, what we have here is a very tiny ruling class that controls the political life of our respective societies and manipulates us into choosing choosing between the two faces of the same operation, and we have to break from that and to build a movement, build upon the daily experience of people being exploited, of their living standards plunging, of their ability to survive put in jeopardy, our health benefits being away, our social services being annihilated, the military machine absorbing all revenue. We need to build a political movement based upon the mass of our people to oppose this, and that's a process that cannot begin too soon.
Thank you so much.
Another caller.
Yes, we're going to go over to Peter in Niagara Falls. Thank you for holding, Peter.
Hi, Joe. My question is, given NORAD's massive incompetence to properly defend U.S. airspace on September the 11th, seeing it as though it took them, I believe, 75 minutes to get fighter jets scrambled upon realizing that planes were being hijacked, what's the official explanation as to why the commanding general of NORAD, General, I believe, Richard B. Myers, on October the 1st, was promoted to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, almost as though he was rewarded for incompetence?
Another excellent question.
It's a very good question. Of course, I mean, I think you're being rhetorical, are you not? Because the official explanation is to ignore it altogether. I mean, there isn't an official explanation. There's an official deep sixing of the reality, because as you point out, it's standard operational procedure. They scramble jets all the time in anticipation of potential attacks, and the interdicted airspace over the Pentagon, over Washington, over the center of New York City, would provide instant monitoring and jet intervention. And actually, Gul Hamid points that out in his long interview. He says, look, you guys trained me. He said, this is standard operational procedure. You don't have a stand down of this nature. When you have a stand down like that, he says, the state is involved. He says, don't believe it. Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, the CNN had announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. He says it is an Air Force rebellion. Radars are jammed. Transponders fail. In Pakistan, if there's no response to the IFF, the friend or foe identifications, jets are instantly scrambled in our country. The aircraft shot down with no questions asked. We're talking about the Pentagon, interdicted space. We're talking about the White House. This is an inside job. Take it from me. You guys trained me. I know from where I speak. And he goes on to detail the particular ways in which NORAD and Andrews Air Force Base were on stand down and aborting their normal procedures. After all, within seconds of a presumptive attack on the White House or the Pentagon, you'd have jet scrambled, let alone 75 minutes without nothing happening.
All
let's
right.
go to another call.
Yes, let's do that. We're going to go over to Beverly in Toronto. Thanks for holding.
Thank you. Hello, Mr. Shoreman.
Yes.
Yeah, in 1990, I know Task Force was headed by Cheney, and under Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz was at the head of that task force. And I know Wolfowitz and Richard Perle worked together in this pressure to create this war, and
yes.
And Richard Perle quite often has various think tanks that are affiliated with him, particularly the Hudson Institute, from which the original report from Iron Mountain came, from the Hudson Institute. And the Hudson Institute was founded by Max Singer, who is a neo-Malthusian type, who would be glad to see, you know, so many people dead because they're just useless eaters, et cetera. And so we have Perle and Wolfowitz, who are now running this war from behind the scenes, and this is what they're coming out of. They're coming out of the report from Iron Mountain Group and from the demand that back then, even, that they occupy the Saudi oil fields. So this has been a long time coming, just as you said, and it seems as though 9/11 gave it the perfect sort of impetus for all of their plans, which they've had on the back burner, to just fall into perfect sort of coincidence, right? So
yes, I what you say is right on the money, and there was an important article in the New York Times Magazine, it's the cover story of the New York Times Magazine of Sunday, September 22nd, called The Sunshine Warrior, which deals with the with Wolfowitz and, of course, Armitage and Richard Pearl. It's not only the Hudson Institute, but it's the Heritage Foundation, and it's the Committee for the Against the Present Danger. This is a sector linked to the Mossad and linked to the Israelis of the American intelligence apparatus that has, since the late 70s, been calling for the forward breaking up of all the states in the Middle East in accordance with the Oded Yinon plan. And in the article, The Sunshine Warrior, it's instructive to note that Paul D. Wolfowitz, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, stepped out of his Air Force Gulfstream into the Kansas heat for a major meeting with a series of generals. And General Eric K. Shinseki, the Army Chief of Staff, pointed out that as a young Pentagon analyst, Wolfowitz directed a secret assessment of the Persian Gulf and marked Iraq as the first target. This Shinseki, I'm quoting from the New York Times, the article by Bill Keller on the 22nd of September, this Shinseki informs them with everything but a drum roll was in 1979, a dozen years before Desert Storm.
Exactly.
So this is a sector of the ruling class that is intimately linked with the Israeli government and the Mossad that seeks to not just use the intermediate client regimes, if you like the Saudi feudal rulers and the Kuwaiti rulers and the rulers of the Gulf, to control the oil for U.S. imperialism. They want to break up all these states and to seize oil direct, have direct military control, and a series of wars in which the United States will have to engage in the kind of operations that require massive repression at home.
We're going to go over to Video Dave now for a pop culture tip-off. Video Dave, thank you for joining us once again. You are a regular, you are fabulous, and could you please tell us what film you're going to tell us has conspiracies within this week?
Well, here we go, gentlemen. It's great to be back. I just want, if you're tired of thrillers that substitute eye candy for logic and mechanical mayhem for tension, then you'll have to do yourself a favor and check out The Parallax View. This is the film we'll be discussing tonight. It's the 1974 Alan J. Pakula film starring Warren Beatty. This is the guy that brought his Pelican Brief and All the President's Men. He was sort of, he was the Oliver Stone of his day, really. He was the first guy that really grabbed the bull, the political film bull, by the horns and started making movies that really meant something.
By the horns. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
All right.
And if you're sensitive to the persuasive power of propaganda and political assassination cover-ups in film, you'll also find this film incredibly fascinating. Anyway, I think, having said that, Lenny, we should go to the clip and then discuss
the clip. And I think we should add that in the dark days of the 70s, when the information and all the lies about the Kennedy assassination were taking root and were spreading and had taken control, in that dark age, it was Parallax View that really gave us some hope that things would break through. And
I agree with your assessment of Parallax View, and I speak from direct involvement in these events because I was director of the Who Killed Kennedy Committee, which we formed in London in 1964, when we brought Mark Lane to London, and Rush to Judgment was written in my flat. So if you may recall that the DA in New Orleans, Jim Garrison, who had launched the only official inquiry by a public official into the circumstances of Kennedy killing, and particularly his accusations of the role of the Central Intelligence Agency. In the late 60s, an Italian newspaper had run an investigation of the role of the Central Intelligence Agency in preparing the coup in Italy. And they turned up a proprietorial organization called Centro Mondiale Commerciale, World Trade Center, and Permindex. Permindex is the root of the theme about of which Parallax View is an explication.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the person who they declared persona non grata in Italy was none other than Clayshaw.
Right.
And Canadians will remember the role of L.M. Bloomfield, who was also called out. in that regard.
Yeah,
and
we
sent that material to the garrison at that time in 67 and worked with him subsequently in his investigation of the case.
We also have to remember, gentlemen, that what made this film different was its approach. I mean, really, it's an outlandish tale of nefarious corporation manipulating American politics.
And to make it clear that how the corporation builds assassins and creates tests to find the people who fit into these roles. It was just terrific.
And it's treated as fantasy. It's not treated as fantasy, so to speak. It's treated as something that's probable.
Yeah, let's roll the clip. Let's roll the clip.
Let's go to the clip.
If you want to use the FBI or the CIA, you don't have to infiltrate the whole agency to do it. At first, I thought these killings were related only to the Carroll assassination. It's much bigger than that. Whoever's behind this is in the business of recruiting assassins. Recruiting assassins. I think I got some of their entrance exams. If I'm right, I'm going to enlist. If you print anything now, I'll be exposed.
All right. Lenny, can you please tell people about our website so they can actually see that clip many others?
For those at home, if you go to cloakanddagger.ca, which you can get through via mojoradio.com, you can get to the media news clip. You can see the links we have on the left-hand side column. You can see secret links, and the secret links will take you to the media news, and on the media news you can go to the Grammars of Film and you can actually see and hear that clip
and many other clips
and
all
many
right.
of the other
Lenny,
clips that we
Dave, did you have a question?
Go ahead, Dave.
Lenny, what's the clip telling us, really? I mean, let me just say this. We have to remember the legacy of Watergate was forming when this film came out.
Right.
The Parallax View expressed it loud and clear. What it expressed was that Americans no longer trust their government, their media news, and even their own history. Is that essentially what the film's philosophy
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely, and it showed the black ops operations that were surfacing and how technically advanced and developed the black ops operations at that time
right.
that were hidden from the American people, really how high-tech they were, that they had corporations, they had entrance exams, they were able to read their minds, do all sorts of things, and create and build these assassins.
If I may say, it was also a reference to MK Ultra. And the mind control operations of the Central Intelligence Agency that were emerging and coming to light partly from the church hearings, but not only from those, and the books that were published by Jonathan Marks and William Board about these operations. MK Ultra was a specific mind control operation of the agency to break people down and recondition them as assassins.
Good stuff.
That's
popped
not
up.
Just a fantasy or a fiction. Parallax View is discussing the real operations of the U.S. government.
All right, Video Dave, I need to ask before we go to break for your final thought. I know it's not about this film per se.
It's not. It's
but
completely
you,
off topic.
You give us new stuff every week.
No, this one's right off the wire. Megalomaniac actor Mel Gibson is now set to direct a movie about Christ. And it's not just about Christ, it's about Christ's last 12 hours of life. And it's played out entirely in two ancient tongues. Latin and Aramaic, with, get this, no subtitles. The formula hardly sounds like the recipe for a hit movie, I mean, really, but Gibson thinks that language should be no barrier to the film, which will be titled The Passion. Now, Gibson has even had the audacity to commission the advice of the Pope himself for inspiration. I know, it's hard to believe, but it's the truth. And get this, word has it that the Pope won't return his phone calls or his emails.
Oh, we're bringing in popery.
Thank you
popery
so much.
And the Mossad.
Video David's always a pleasure. Thank you so much, Ralph Schulman. You know, every time that Ralph says something about something he did, like I didn't know that in 64 he was in London trying to figure out who killed Kennedy, every time, Mr. Schulman, every time that you say something, I go, there's something new about you I didn't know. Where can I find out all the things about you? Where is your website? Where can we find you?
Thank you, brother. People who are interested in finding out information and getting our books and pamphlets and materials should contact us at takingaim@pacbell, that's P as in Peter, A-C-B-E-L-L .net. Taking Aim is our weekly radio broadcast on the New York station WBAI, the Pacifica station in New York, and actually it can be heard on the Internet. People can, we're on Tuesdays, every Tuesday at 5 p.m., and you go to your Internet and go to www.wbaiai.org and go to listen, you can hear us. So contact us by email at takingaim@pacbell.net.
Listen to us Tuesdays at 5 Eastern Standard Time on www.wbai.org. And if you want to hear our show called 9/11 False Flag Operation, you can get that at www.radio4Houston.org/911. Please contact us for books and pamphlets, including the 5-hour CD and tape World Trade Center Uncensored History. Once again, contact us at takethename@pacbell.net.
Okay, we're going to have all of this on our website. So if you go to mojoradio.com.
We've already got his link.
Yes, on the right-hand side of our mojoradio.com, click on Cloak and Dagger. And once you get to Cloak and Dagger, you can find out all of these links to reach Ralph Schoeman. Now, we're going to get to some phone calls. And this first call is something that might be very, very either serious or strange. Hello, and thank you for calling. Artmid.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Tell us about the plans for Solomon's Temple. Who wants to rebuild this thing and why?
That's a very good question. Who wants to rebuild Solomon's Temple on the Dome of the Rock?
Well, it was precisely the plans to undermine the Dome of the Rock by tunneling underneath it under the pretext of looking for the original foundations of Solomon's Temple that gave rise to the present Intifada, which is now in its second year. And when Sharon led a group of Israeli operatives to the very mosque, as a calculated provocation, it was intended to set in motion precisely which was Palestinian resistance, Palestinian response to the ever-continuing attempt to expel and remove the Palestinian people from Palestine, from their homeland. My book, The Hidden History of Zionism, deals with that in great particularity. But that's what the plans for the return of or the rebuilding of the Solomon's Temple are really about. It's simply a provocation designed to trigger Palestinian resistance, once again to provide the rationale for what we see unfolding right now in the West Bank and Gaza, which is the ruthless destruction of the entire infrastructure of Palestinian society. And in that regard, Ahmed, be clear that under the cover of the wider war, the Sharon regime and the Zionist regime intends to expel the Palestinian population and to do the ethnic cleansing with which the Israeli state was formed in the first place.
Agent Eve, what do you think of our show?
I love Mojo Radio, but I think I should be on a different show because this one's pretty scary.
All right, well, that's honest. Let's get over to Roy. Roy, thank you for calling.
How you doing?
Very good.
Very interesting, and I just have some issues with the comments Mr. Schulman made, and that is this, okay, and please hear me out. I'll need about 30 seconds of your time. First of all, there are about 160 countries in the world, approximately. Over 80 of them are Muslim countries. There's only one Jewish country in the world, and that is Israel. That's it. There are 80. Talk about world dominance. We don't believe, more than anything else, that Israel provokes the Palestinians. If anything, it's the other way around. And I'll tell you why. When Hamas and the other, Al-Qaeda and all these other people and groups and organizations say they want holy jihad and they want war and everything else, when Israel goes to Gaza, when they go to Ramallah, they're not going there to bother civilians. They're saying to Hamas, you guys want war, we're here. What do? They hide. The same thing is going on in Afghanistan. The United States goes there to get Al-Qaeda. What are they doing? They're hiding in caves. It's not a war, it's hide and seek. And I guarantee you, that when the United States attacks Iraq and makes them pay for this foolish, cowardly deeds where they attack from behind, they're going to do the same thing they did 11 years ago. They're going to put down their rifles and they're going to surrender. You know it and I know it. Terror disease is full of crap. All he says is, there's going to be a lot of American casualties and everything else. I want to see it. And every single time there's a conflict with Muslim countries, they hide. They run away, and they turn away, and they say, this and that, and blah, 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 holy jihad. When Israel goes there, they're saying, come on, guys, you want war now? Let's go. Don't blow up our civilians on buses. 10-year-old girls and 12-year-old kids don't understand what's going on here. And that's what they pick on. One quick story. Did you see the CNN link site?
More than 30 seconds, brother.
I'm sorry, but the CNN link site where they had the terrorist bombing where all those students were killed, 10 and 12-year-olds? Well, I told people, I said, listen, there are terrorists on the other side. But don't you think that one of these days somebody's going to kill an innocent victim in Israel and one of their parents are going to become a terrorist? You know what? One of the girls that was killed was a 12-year-old from a biochemist. And you know what the father was swearing at her funeral?
Right,
that he
was going to
get the one.
Let me respond to this.
Yeah,
if
go ahead.
Fine.
Yeah, I want to hear.
All right, here we go.
First of all, I want to point out to you that this is turning history on its head. The Zionist movement, and by the way, I speak to you as someone who lost 75 members in the Holocaust, members of my family, so don't try the old trick of accusing anybody who exposes the real nature of the Israeli state and Zionism of being an anti-Semite. The shoe is on the other foot. The reality is that Zionism from its inception was a colonial operation which set as its task the elimination and removal of the Palestinian people. When the Israeli state was formed in 1947, they had 3% of the land. And the United Nations, under the direction of the U.S. that sought Israel as a cat's paw for its operations in the Middle East, assigned it 55% of the most fertile land. Within 6 months before the actual formation of the state, the Zionist militia drove out 860,000 people through a series of massacres from one end of Palestine to the other. Massacres that leveled villages. There were 475 Palestinian towns and villages. 385 of them were reduced to rubble. They were on the face of the map. Now 96% of the land was in Israeli hands, in Zionist hands, and they passed legislation to the effect that in order to be entitled to own land, to live on it, to work on it, to sharecrop it, to lease it, you have to prove at least four generations of maternal Jewish descent. Now I put it to you. Suppose somebody in Canada or the United States said to you or me that in order to be entitled to own land, to live on it, to lease it, to work on it, you had to prove you had no Jewish blood for at least four generations. What would you think of that sort of and that sort of legislation? The Israeli state, the Zionist state, is a colonial operation that set as its task the elimination of the Palestinian people and their presence in Palestine.
You're absolutely
Everybody
wrong.
Everybody understands the difference.
You are absolutely wrong.
To a country and
no, you're wrong.
It.
You're
it
wrong.
No different of African apartheid regime than any of the colonial operations or, for that matter, the fate of the Native Americans in North America. The Palestinian people are the world's soldiers for justice. They are fighting for their self-determination. They are struggling for their survival, and they are up against the third largest military power in the world, armed with American weapons, whose real function is to serve as a cat's paw for the seizure of oil, the resources, and the destruction of the struggle for self-determination, for national sovereignty, for human dignity in the Arab East.
Bill, thank you for holding.
Good evening. I just had a question. Based on the patterns that we've seen from, like, the invasion in Iraq in 91 and the bombing in 93 and all that, and even the recent bombing, my question is, what do you speculate on the future pattern of events, a possible invasion of Iran or North Korea or Syria or anything like that, maybe some South American countries? I'm just wondering what you speculate on the future patterns.
So let me say to you very succinctly that the breakup of these countries has been planned for at least 30 years. The Pentagon analyst Robert Tucker in 1975 called oil the issue of American intervention. He says, without our intervention, there is the possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. And then he said, the one area that will satisfy our requirements extends from Kuwait down from the coastal region to Qatar. It is less than 400 miles long and provides 40% of OPEC production. And he said, it's the new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. And the Pentagon in 1979 issued a report in which it said, which it was preparing the 100,000-man quick strike force. This is 1979. It's 12 years before the Gulf War, actually 13. And they had in motion the entire strike force for the operation in Kuwait and against Iraq. And the Pentagon report states on January 19, 1979, we need a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can sell the use of our strike force. It will turn out that the boogeyman will not be defined the same in Arabic as in English, unquote. That's what we're dealing with. Iran, of course, is part of the scenario. We have to understand, you heard one of the first callers that called in asked about Donald Rumsfeld in relation to Iraq. Yes, Rumsfeld and Pearl and Cheney and these people, the American rulers, had targeted Iraq for its oil long before the pretext that they're now invoking at the moment. And keep in mind this, and I'll try to be brief about this. The Saddam Hussein regime was created by the Central Intelligence Agency. Saddam Hussein was an asset of the CIA who was deployed to assassinate Abdul Karim Qasim, the president of the country, who was nationalizing the oil and legalizing the socialist, the communist, and the national parties. The CIA targeted him. They installed Saddam Hussein in power. He was their man in Baghdad for 27 years. Now they're deploying him like Noriega as a demon to create the rationale for breaking up this country and seizing its resources. First Iraq, then Iran, and they say 60 countries to follow.
And we have to live up. We have to live with this nonsense propaganda that we're being thrown. That he's a boogeyman.
How does Bill Tyree tie into this, Ralph?
Yes, let's move for the moment to Bill Tyree for our listeners to understand. Bill Tyree was a former. Bill Tyree was represented by Ray Coleman. He was the investigator for William Pepper, who had been the lawyer for James Earl Ray and investigated the assassination of Martin Luther King. William M. Bill Tyree was a former Green Beret. And in the lawsuit on his behalf, the lawsuit found that, in fact, there was a cover-up of something called Operation Watchtower involving the Central Intelligence Agency and George Bush, which was the basis for the funding of FEMA, then called the Federal Emergency Military Agency. It was a clandestine and illegal operation which was intended to provide the basis for martial law in the United States. In September 1998, a $63 million lawsuit was filed by Coleman on behalf of William Tyree. He filed a 101-page report, and he named as defendants former President George Bush and former CIA director, and the lawsuit states Jackson Stevens and Mukhtar Riadi were in business together paying off politicians from Arkansas to look the other way while the CIA cocaine operations proceeded to introduce cocaine throughout the United States from its base at Mena, Arkansas.
All right, listen, we have to just get to one more question because this has been an email that came here at the very beginning of the show, and we've only got about a two-minute answer, Mr. Schulman, because we've got to get to this. Agent Eve, please read the question.
Okay, guys, we have an email from Mark 11 who says, I enjoy your show most of the time, but some things I don't agree with. I have a question for Lenny, Bob, Deep, and Mr. Schoenman. Don't you worry that you may get misinformation and be duped for the bad guys. How can anyone really know what is true?
Well, as media scientists, we are always updating consciousness and always banging information against information and figuring out, with the taintiness of the information food chain, what is truth and what is not. We bang it around, and we're as media scientists, that's our job to detect this, remembering that poetry communicates long before it is understood.
Well, yes, let me address that. Whenever I do anything in the way of investigative work, whether it's a radio broadcast or the many books or the articles, I seek to document meticulously every assertion, every statement, every fact. I rely, for the most part, on established media. Now, you may ask, why rely on the established media when the established media are known to lie? The answer to that is an old juridical principle called evidence against interest. If I tell you that my apples or my spam are great, buy them. That's in my interest to say that, but if I say the crop's bad, buy someone else's, mine are not good today, that's evidence against interest and it carries greater weight.
Excellent.
You rely on information out of the media that makes the case against their own interests, and we try to do that with precision and documentation so that you can verify it, you can get the sources for yourself, and you can form your own opinion.
Over to you, Sleeper. How are things on the internet today?
Well, absolutely fantastic. We've got the forum up and running, so we've got lots of input coming in there, and tons of emails came in this week. We've been trying to respond to as many as we can. I just want to point out to that last caller that the people we're dealing with who are putting this show together are at the top, the absolute tops of what they do. For over 40 years, they've been exploring and exposing media, beginning with the Kennedy assassination up until today. They're not people who are just learning today that someone might be lying on television. They've been watching this game on play for decades.
That's right.
They've been experiencing a jolting series of strange disappointments down the long lane of generations is what's happening.
I don't think I hear you, Lenny. I think we have some problems with the sound right now. I should say, though, Sleeper, that when I'm thinking about that what's true and what's not true, I'm new here, and Nick and Carla from Mojo Radio, they're fairly new here, so we are the ones that work for Mojo, and Lenny, Bob, and all of our special guests are absolute experts.
Yeah, Bob, you in there?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess we just have to just finish off here. One of the interesting things about, you know, this propaganda war that's happening and the information war, and people can go to the Media News website and take the political scholastic aptitude test. It's quite an interesting test and test their knowledge. But the propaganda is designed, Bob, isn't it, here to distract us from what's really happening? I mean, even if Iran has missiles of destruction, why would you want to attack it if they do have that? But meanwhile, they don't deal with that point, because if they did have missiles of mass destruction and weapons of mass destruction, the last thing you'd want to do is arm and take an attack on them. You'd want to, I mean, why not send in China or send in Spider-Man culture films? Why attack them with bombs? Why not just send in some jazz artists? Why not do that? Wouldn't you do that if these people did have missiles of mass destruction?
Well, I really enjoyed that last question, because that is the endless drama of cognition that we're involved in. And also go to the McLuhan Institute site and read my articles on the drama of cognition. This endless pursuit of what is real and what isn't, that is the ultimate point, and that is what the Android meme is replaying back to us. An example of how we play this off, we featured exposures of the Jesuits. That was through Eric Phelps and Sherman Skolnick. We've exposed the Freemasons. That was Jeff Steinberg and Sherman Skolnick again, and Leonard Horowitz. We've exposed the Bolsheviks through Alex Jones. We've exposed the Nazis through the Dave Emery Network and Horowitz. And now we've exposed the Arab complex, the Semitic races, and involves the Mossad and their competitors, the source of that as well. So we've played off five networks here, global historical propagandists, and all of them themselves are operating inside the Android meme. And I would like to talk with Android Beam some point in the future in more detail, but the information environment has come alive. We can't know the truth, and we can't even know the questions. This is our problem.
That's right, and if people want to know more about the Android meme, they can go to Cloak and Dagger. They can go to mojoradio.com, click on Cloak and Dagger, and through there you can get to the McLuhan site where you can read Bob's information and see his charts and understand the Android meme, basically computers talking to themselves and doing all kinds of things.
And pretending they're talking to us.
That's right.
That's right. And help them deal with the tragedy that's going on that we all are witnessing and experiencing, and we can get through if we stay on top of what's really going on. And as it goes, it's tragedy and sex. That's the beauty of Cloak and Dagger, tragedy and sex. We collective psychiatry on whole populations. Isn't that right, Dobbs?
No problem with that one.
All right. Well, it was great seeing you in New York. I feel safer knowing that you're safe, Bob Dobbs.
I am safe, and I say eat the Android meme, eat everything we've said, ignore what we mean, and come back next week.
That's right, and I would like to thank our callers, especially Roy. You're very passionate. I hope you'll continue this discourse. We didn't mean to not let you go any further, because we're not censoring our callers. We're just trying to get to as many as we can. I'd like to apologize to the callers who didn't get on, but that's just the way it goes. We have so much information to get to. Isn't that right?
That's right, and make sure you... Sorry, Bob, and just I'll let you finish off, but make sure you've got an alibi so when Big Brother asks you, where were you when this show was on, make sure you can tell them that you weren't listening to us.
Yeah, you were not listening to Cloak and Dagger on MojoRadio.com. You were watching Seinfeld reruns on another channel or something, because you want to be safe here. I want to thank Agent Stone, Eve. Eve Stone, thank you for coming.
No problem. Anytime. I had a good time. Thank you.
Well, I look forward to getting on the internet and checking you out. What's up next week, Lenny?
Next week, Greg Palast. Greg Palast will be on. We'll be talking about something close to home. We'll be talking about Barrick Gold and Mr. Peter Monk and all the conspiracies going on there.
All right. So on behalf of Bob Dobbs, Lenny Bloom, and our agent, thank you for listening. Thank you to Ralph Schulman, to Nick and Carla here at Mojo. And Bob, the last word is yours.
Come to our public forum, Roy, and continue the dialogue.